Greeny with Mike Greenberg, the podcast.
Greeny presented by Progressive Insurance. Yes, it just got interestinger and interestinger, didn't it? Adam Schefter tweeting 3 minutes ago, blockbuster. The Bills are finalizing a trade to send four-time Pro Bowl wide receiver Stephon Diggs to the Houston Texans for draft pick compensation, sources tell ESPN. That's interesting in so many different ways and for so many different reasons. You know, the drama one, the, you know, what's the tea one, as my daughter would say, is all about the relationship between Stephon Diggs and Josh Allen, which at one point was as strong, powerful, and important as any relationship, I think, in the sport. And I think Stephon Diggs will always be someone who deserves a lot of credit for contributing significantly to the development of Josh Allen. But somewhere along the line, it just became evident from the outside looking in that their relationship went sideways. It's not clear to me why. There were a trillion rumors that go around all the time. I will not dignify any of them because I don't know any of them to be true. But the point is, one way or another, everything just wasn't all right between those two guys. And now Stephon Diggs gets traded to Houston, where maybe he can do for C.J. Stroud what he did for Josh Allen. Although, candidly, Stroud is so far ahead in his development of where Allen was at the same time, you know, at the same juncture of his career, that, Bubba, it seems to me like the question is not, can Stephon Diggs make C.J. Stroud a superstar? The question is, can Stephon Diggs be the piece that puts Houston over the top in the AFC? I don't think it's overstating it to say this might be that kind of move.
Oh yeah, I mean they were 10-7 without him. So I mean, you're adding this guy; it's unbelievable. And I just think from the Bills' perspective, I get obviously it wasn't working between those two, but it just seems tough that you're just going to be willingly letting go someone that good like that. Your roster is significantly worse when you let go someone as good as Stephon Diggs just for some draft picks. Like what? I mean, as a Bills fan, you got to be incredibly frustrated to do that. But I mean, from the Texans side, they are right in there for one of the teams to beat. And what a fun offense they have right now.
What is the draft? I'm just calling it up here. What I should know this in my head, but where do the Bills pick? The Bills pick 28th. Here are the names that you're going to be hearing around that time. The kid, what's his name? Xavier Worthy, who ran the 4.2 40 at the combine. A kid named Adonai Mitchell, who you may remember first from Georgia and then Texas. They call him A.D. Mitchell. Those are two names that I think you're going to be hearing late in round one. Brian Thomas, who was the other receiver. Not a nice way to say that, but there were two star receivers, two first-round receivers at LSU. One of them is Malik Nabers, who's going to go top 10 for sure. And then there's another Brian Thomas, who looks like a really good player. There are a bunch of really, really good receivers in this year's draft. So I would guess the Bills now, certainly that would be one expectation as they draft one.
We've got compensation.
Let me hear it.
Bills receive 2025 second-round pick via Minnesota. Texans receive Stephon Diggs, a 2024 sixth-round pick, and a 2025 fifth-round pick.
So they got a second this year, basically is what you're telling me. The Bills got a second.
Next year.
2025.
A 2025 second-round pick via Minnesota. Texans receive Stephon Diggs and 2024 sixth-round pick and a 2025 fifth-round pick.
Wow. So you just don't get how old is Diggs? How old is Diggs?
I want to say he's like 30, yeah. I would say. He did the same thing in Minnesota.
Well, I was always under the impression that in Minnesota it was about money. Was it about money? The Minnesota just wasn't going to pay him. They had the two star receivers there, and they weren't going to pay him, and so he got traded and got his money. And so while he got traded out of there, I understand what you're saying. I felt like there was a more obvious explanation. I may very well be missing something. I felt like there was that obvious explanation there that I'm not sure exists here.
No, I think you're right, but I don't think there's a coincidence that the Vikings went to the championship game in 2017. They made the playoffs in 2019, fell short again. He asks out. He probably felt like both times, okay, these teams I'm on have missed their window. I want to be somewhere that's more up and coming. The Texans are obviously that.
The Texans have added Joe Mixon. They've added Stephon Diggs. They have a receiver that no one ever talks about, but is a really good player in Nico Collins. plus Tank Dell, plus the tight end Dalton Schultz, the star young quarterback C.J. Stroud, who's on the rookie contract. On that defense, they added Danelle Hunter, who is a player that when we went through the free agent period there in mid-March, so many people who really know football were pointing at that and saying that could be one of the most impactful moves that was made in all of free agency. Boy, they're going to be something to watch. Houston is really a team to watch. Going to be fascinating. You know what else is interesting? This made me think of it. Can I digress just slightly, but it's C.J. Stroud related? So, you know, I do the draft, and so the guy who produces the draft coverage is a guy named Brian Ryder, and he sent all of us like a little video link to watch how we handled the first three picks last year, just to sort of get, you know, this is what we did, this is what our plans are, this is what we want to do differently, whatever. So I sat down and I watched yesterday the coverage of the first three picks of the draft, and it is just amazing when you look back a year later at how different all of the dynamics are. First off, the idea that Bryce Young would go first took no one by surprise. There were no questions of it. The conversations were all about if his size isn't a problem, he's dynamic, he's like a little pint-sized Patrick Mahomes. There was no one questioning it. Further, everyone was talking about how stable the Carolina coaching situation felt, how ready they were to develop a young quarterback with Jim Caldwell and Frank Reich and all these guys on the staff, plus Josh McCown there. Like, that seemed great. That seemed like a great situation. We've seen, obviously, a year later, it couldn't look more the opposite. And then when Stroud got picked, it was a stunner. Like, the first words out of my mouth were, that sound you hear all across America is people ripping up their mock drafts. So looking back on it now, and I didn't even remember that anymore, not only was it not a surprise that Bryce Young went ahead of Stroud, it was a surprise that Stroud went second. Everyone thought they were going to take a defensive player, and then, of course, they traded up and took Will Anderson at three, so they still got the defensive player. But my point is, just a year later, the way the storylines change, as I was watching it yesterday, it really struck me.
I think we do this every year, too. We, like, forget what our perception of what the top picks are going to be before they actually happen, and then we recontextualize once we see them play their first season. Like, there are already people saying, like, well, Trevor Lawrence wasn't really, you know, expected to be the generational talent. Like, yes, he was.
Oh, like, he was.
We just always do this where we see them play a couple seasons and then reconfirm what we thought beforehand based on what happens in the NFL. But we get this wrong all the time, so it just goes to show that we have all these mock drafts, we have all this stuff laid out, and there's reason for doing that, but a lot of times we're very surprised and a lot of times we're very wrong.
And almost all the time, it is because of the circumstances. Football is the most interdependent game of any of the sports that we cover. If you're a great basketball player, no matter what team you go to, you're going to be a great basketball player. If you're a great baseball player, no matter what team and situation you go to, you're going to be a great baseball player. If you're a great football player and you go to the, particularly at that position, and you go to the wrong place, you're not going to be. So it's not because these guys weren't talented enough. It's not because they didn't work hard enough. There are a lot of reasons why these things happen, and the organizations have a lot more to do with them than the players themselves. That said, I have to ask you how lightly I need to tread around something dangerous here, Bubba. Bubba, mm-hmm. How big is Chris Canty?
I think he's 6'8", maybe.
And how much do you think he weighs?
Ooh.
No comment. He's a planet, yeah, right? I mean, he's a planet. Like, when you walk by
probably
Chris,
two to three of you.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the biggest people I've ever been around in my entire life. Like, when I walk by him, I'm afraid I'm going to get sucked into an orbit.
Yeah, he's north of three bills. That's
yeah,
for sure.
He's just a huge man, and I love him. He's a sweetheart. He's a teddy bear, but I have a bone to pick. Up to and including, I may have to go at Chris Canty, because this morning on Unsportsmanlike, with Chris and Evan and Michelle Smallman, they were counting, they gave five teams that you could count out already for next year's playoffs. Five teams you can already count out for next year's playoffs. The Panthers, the Patriots, the Broncos, the Titans, all that is well and good, and then the Jets. He said the Jets are one of five teams you can count out now for next year's playoffs. And here's why.
For whatever reason, I don't think any of it's going to matter. Talent hasn't been the Jets' issue. It's the culture within the building. They can't get out of their own way. And you know who sets the culture right now? It's not the head coach. It's not the general manager. Hell, it ain't even the owner. It's Aaron Rodgers. And after what we've seen over the last calendar year, how in the hell can you have faith that the New York Jets are going to compete at a championship level?
Okay, so can I tell you the God's honest truth? I honestly disagree. I honestly disagree with that. Bubba and Cam, hear me out. Aaron Rodgers has shown to be a very, very different person, right? Let's there are any number of different ways he has his own way of thinking. There are people who think like he does. The overwhelming majority of people do not. A lot of people have huge problems with the things that he has said, and that's all fine. Everyone is entitled to feel however they feel about anything. I have my own feelings, and that is what it is. But the football piece of it, if we're just talking about the football piece of it, Aaron Rodgers, from the moment he got there until the moment he got hurt, I felt like was the best leader the Jets have had since Rex Ryan. That's inclusive of all of the coaches and anybody else. Rex is a genuinely excellent leader as a coach. His players loved him. His players played hard for him and all the rest of that. There are great leaders in the sport. Aaron Rodgers was that. I would much rather have Aaron Rodgers, whatever you think of his politics, his social positions, or anything else. If you're a football fan, if you're a fan of the Jets, I would rather have Aaron Rodgers setting the tone, setting the culture, and being the leader than anyone else they have in the building. So what Chris Canty is pointing out as a problem, I actually think is a good thing. And I don't think it's impossible that it works out really well. Now, are they trying to catch lightning in a bottle? Of course. Is that an incredibly hard thing to do? Of course. Is it unlikely that it works out to the nth degree? Yeah, of course it is. No one is sitting here saying the Jets, if you're in Vegas, you're not betting even money that the Jets are going to wind up winning the division and winning the Super Bowl because so many things have to go right. But they could. And Aaron Rodgers actually is the least of my concerns when it comes to all of that. Bubba and Cam, does that make sense?
It does make sense, and I don't necessarily agree. I think the culture is a huge part of it, but I think they have had talent deficiencies, especially on the offense. Part of that is because of the people that Aaron Rodgers brought in. Obviously, it might have worked better if he was there, but I don't think it's just the culture that has been limiting them, and I think they've done a really good job this offseason. I'm still a little skeptical that it'll all click together. They might have a slow start this season. I expect them to make the playoffs. I think the Bills not having Stephon Diggs definitely helps in terms of their trying to win the AFC East. But I do think if everyone's there, it makes sense that it should work. But I wouldn't be shocked if it doesn't all click together, even with him at the helm.
Bubba.
Yeah, I mean, I think I said it yesterday. You know, they had whatever it was, 7 wins last year when it was a disaster. And I think the leadership is the key thing because obviously I don't think they really had it under Adam Gase, and you could argue it wasn't necessarily there with Bowles. So I think, you know, like you said, whether Sal is their leader or not, and he obviously probably isn't, Rodgers is their leader, and, you know, they awarded him that whatever insane award they gave him. The team responds to Rodgers, and even when he wasn't there, he was kind of leading the team. So I think if Rodgers is going to be there for the full year with these additions, it is a different team. I think what Kenny is saying in the past definitely holds true, but that is more of the past. The past has been a disaster, again, with Gase and Bowles, and a lot of that was with Idzik and McCagden and all that disaster now. But I think this is specifically a Rodgers thing where right now the players respond to Rodgers, and they haven't had that in the past. And I think there can be success. And again, you're telling me they won 7 games last year with Zach Wilson running around. And if Rodgers can play majority of the games this year, I think they can have success.
I do too. Hambo's not here. Cam's got trivia.
Yeah, thought we were going to be talking some Caleb Williams, some Bronny James, but we got a little sidetracked by a big trade, but we're going to do a USC question. So Carson Palmer, obviously, leads all USC quarterbacks in career passing yards in the NFL by a lot with 46,247 yards. Who is second?
I like that question. Second to Carson Palmer among all USC quarterbacks? The answer's next on ESPN Radio.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Greeny today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Greeny, GREENY.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Greeny, the podcast.
All right, Greeny with you on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Good fun today. And a good question. We were planning on having a bunch of topics that were USC related. Then we got the breaking sport, the breaking football news. Stephon Diggs, if you're just joining us, has been traded from Buffalo to Houston for a draft pick compensation, which is a fascinating trade. And the Texans are starting to look legitimately like a Super Bowl threat in the AFC. But anyway, that was the reason that Cam chose this question.
Carson Palmer, the most prolific career in the NFL of any USC quarterback by far. He has the most passing yards, touchdowns, completions, yada, yada. Most passing yards with 46,247. You're looking for who's second place among USC quarterbacks in the NFL in career passing yards?
Well, it is amazing how few of the – there have been so many very, very well-known USC quarterbacks – and how little, generally speaking, how little huge success they've gone on to in the NFL. I have a guess in my head. Bubba, who do you have?
Yeah, not a great guess, but I'm going to go with one of the names that you guys were batting around in the Seaport. I'm going to go with, I believe he's a former Cowboy, Rodney Pete.
Rodney Pete, that's also Brandon's, right?
Yep, we got two Rodney Petes from Brandon and Brendan.
So Brandon and Brendan are both going Rodney Pete. Who are you going with over there, Pineapple Jack? Yeah, Mark Sanchez. Me too. I think Sanchez was the starter for a long time, and I think he's. If I had to bet on it right now, I would bet he started more NFL games than Rodney Pete did. Now I could be wrong. Rodney was in the NFL a really long time. I don't remember him being the regular starter for a particularly long time, but I could be misremembering that. I'm going Sanchez. So we got two Sanchez's and two Rodney Petes. What is the answer?
The correct answer is Matt Castle. Matt Castle is second in yards, touchdowns, and completions for USC quarterbacks. He started 81 games. Rodney Pete started 87.
Wait a minute. Yeah, and how many did Sanchez start?
73.
So wait a minute. Castle, after that year in New England, did he sign with San Francisco? What
no.
am I remembering?
He played with the Chiefs for a couple of years, and then he was a journeyman, but he played a lot of games. And he is second in almost every legitimate passing category
wow.
for USC quarterbacks. So
wow, that's Hembo level sneaky.
Yeah, I was proud of that one.
That's
wow.
a good one. And not one of us got that right. By the way, Brandon, in on the order today and seems to be eating soup. What kind of soup did you get? You got the chicken noodle.
No okay. wonton.
Fair enough. No wonton soup and lifesavers today. All right, Chinea is ready to go. Beautiful. This is what I really wanted to do. We've got, she is the perfect person, Chinea Gumbuke, who herself was one of the terrific college basketball players of recent memory and, of course, now an outstanding analyst for us on the NBA as well as the women's college basketball. And I have questions about both of those for our friend Chinea, who was good enough to get up with us this morning on TV and joins us now here on ESPN Radio. Hello again, Chinea.
Hi, Greeny. How you doing?
I'm doing great, and I always appreciate your time. Let me start with the women's game the other night. You know, I had Andrea on TV yesterday, and Rebecca Lobo. And she said, Rebecca's one who said to me, Greeny, do you think we'll get over 10? Like the amount, and of course, the number wound up coming in 12.3 million viewers. I talked about this a little bit earlier. You know, the amount, just how meaningful this was to those of you who built this, and that has nothing to do with me, the people who built this thing, to see it culminate in a night like that. And as I said earlier, it did not feel like the end of something. It actually felt more like the beginning of something. But to see that night play out the way it did, and to have been the part of it that you were with Drea and Elle and everything else, before anything else, I just am curious what your reaction was when you saw that number and the degree to which this game captured the entire American public.
So I'll take you a little bit behind the scenes. So we had been having so much fun working the tournament, and then we started catching wind of like, wow, like these games are delivering. And so before the Elite Eight matchups where we saw Iowa, LSU, USC, UConn, Drea, Elle, and I huddled up before we went into the studios, Studio W, as you know, in Bristol, and we're like, y'all, can we just like take a moment? Because we're going to go out there and do what we do as if no one is watching, right? But for some reason, the moment, the players, the games has the world's attention, rightfully so, because that's never a given when it has come to women's sports and women's basketball. So we all sort of like had our little kumbaya and we're like, go team, let's go have some fun. But we took a moment to appreciate. And I think that's what those 12 million viewers are emblematic of. I mean, we stand on the shoulders of those who come before us. Myself as a women's basketball player, getting to 12.3 million viewers is literally a testament to all the stars for years and years that were not seen under this tremendous spotlight that we're currently highlighting the women's game with. The countless women who continued to play. And I always tell people, like, my mentor, my best big sis is Lisa Leslie. I've been fortunate to build a relationship with her. Those women in 96 changed the game, coming off of the Olympics, and then there's the birth of the WNBA. But they were playing for legacy, right? They were playing because they wanted to show the world that our product is just as good, if not better, in some ways, right? That's what we play for. And so those women that have done it, whether there was one viewer or not, that's what that moment takes us back to. But even just meeting the moment of the now, I just feel like you mentioned, like, how did I feel? I thought that at some point, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to get my hopes up because, like, in women's sports, in women's basketball, you hope and then the goal is consistency. We all were like, okay, it'd be nice if we danced around this, you know, viewership. When we heard 12.3, we're like, we are here. We have arrived because now that number is consistent in a way that we have never seen before. And so I don't know, like, those were my emotions, those were my feelings, and I'm just grateful to be a part of a network that is investing in all the right ways at the right time.
Yeah. I opened both yesterday and today's show talking about Pat Summitt, who I wish had lived to see this, and Hembo and I wrote about her in our book last year. There was no one individual person who deserves more credit for this day eventually coming than she did, and then she does. And wherever she is, I hope she was watching it, and I hope she was proud of it. Okay, having said that, let's cover it like we cover basketball, which is what we should be doing. So let's dive into this thing here. Caitlin Clark goes on now. What is at stake for her? If she is already the biggest star that the sport has ever produced. But the one thing that is significantly missing from her resume, of course, is a championship. She got her team to the final last year and they lost to LSU. If she wins it this year, what will that mean?
So you started off with legacy. Caitlin Clark's legacy, no matter if she scores one more point or 100 in the Final Four, is certified when it comes to her college resume. Legacy is that she has been the most impactful player the game has seen in generations. Now, winning a national championship puts her into different conversations. And now this is the fun part, right? Drea and I, in between all these games, are always debating. She believes the national championship will make her the greatest college basketball player of all time. I disagree in some ways, because I have been fortunate to play against the likes of a Diana Taurasi, who won 3 natties and 2 most outstanding players in a tournament. Candace Parker played against her, and she was my teammate in LA for some short time. She won 3 natties, or actually, sorry, she won 2 natties, and she changed the culture too, dunking in the tournament. Maya Moore, the hardest player in my career that I have ever had to defend. That was my freshman year assignment when UConn was like on an 83-game win streak in a career in which she has been, you know, won championships at every level. Stewie beat me in my final 4 game as a senior, like my last college game. Stewie beat me en route to 4 national championships. Caitlin winning puts her in the conversation based off of her being the greatest, most prolific scorer that the game has ever seen, but I don't think it puts her in the conversation of certifying her and crowning her as the greatest player overall, because our history has had, you know, in Stephen A's words, some bad women. They've had some really bad women that has played the game, and they played it and impacted it in different ways. But Caitlin is absolutely the most impactful, the most prolific scorer that we have seen that benefits from where the game is right now and the way it's being played.
That was a good conversation. I had the same discussion with Rebecca Lobo yesterday, and she brought up a lot of those same names. So it's good stuff there. And then for those who are not aware, again, there are so many people who are very new to this party. Waiting on the other side of the Final Four bracket is the best team, right? And we can talk all we want about UConn and their history. We can talk about Caitlin Clark and what she has done. We could talk about LSU, whoever you want. South Carolina hasn't lost a game all year, and they remain the significant favorite here regardless, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know what's wild, Greeny? South Carolina has 2 starting squads, and those 2 squads could potentially have made it to the Final Four. Mm. And this is a team, and this is the greatest luxury. When we talk about Caitlin Clark and how great she has been, the reason why she's great is because she has no margin for error. She's accounting for 71% of Iowa's offense versus LSU. South Carolina has a margin for error, and that's because they have a wealth of talent offensively, but they also have one of the best defenses that we have seen in the college game. Again, 2 starting squads. They have depth. And there was this one big weakness that allowed, you know, South Carolina to exit last year's Final Four. It was perimeter scoring last year. Well, guess what? What do they do? Now they're number 1 in 3-point shooting percentage in D1. They include a new transfer in Tahina Pau-Pau, who is one of the top 3 percentage 3-point shooters. A lot of the pains of last year's Final Four were a player like Raven Johnson is waved off and people sag off of at times Bree Hall. Those things can't happen today on the perimeter. That weakness has been, fixed. On top of it, they have size. They have at least 4 players that can, you know, hold it down in the post. They have Camila Cardoso, a center who just declared for the WNBA draft with professional experience playing on the Brazilian national team. And on top of it, they're coached by one of the greatest minds in Coach Dawn Staley, who understands what it's like to play in a spotlight and deliver, whether it is herself as a player, herself as an Olympian, an Olympic coach. Literally, her players said it best. They said, why would we sweat in these late end-of-game situations like we have seen in the SEC tournament, or we have seen just not too long ago versus Oregon State in the tournament as well? Why would we sweat when we need to hit a big shot? Dawn Staley is our coach. If she ain't sweating, I ain't sweating. Now I get that, Greeny, because she can't sweat through those Louis Vuitton Prada outfits that she wears. But I think her teammates get the message in that they are confident. They know that they can shoot the ball better. They know they have defense, and they know they have bodies. They are the favorite to win it all.
Janae Ogunwoke with us here talking women's college basketball, and I will turn our attention to the NBA. It's Greeny presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive makes bundling easy and affordable. Get a multi-policy discount by combining your motorcycle, RV, boat, ATV, and more. All your protection in one place. Bundle and save at Progressive.com. I have 2 NBA questions for you, Janae.
Hit me.
Let's start with Joel Embiid. He comes back last night. Sixers beat OKC. He looks winded, but he looks pretty good. Played 29 minutes. They have 6 games left. If someone were to say, I mean, the Celtics have a 12-game lead over second place in the Eastern Conference. They're ridiculously dominant. But if I'm telling you right now that something really strange is going to happen, and it isn't Boston that is going to wind up in the NBA Finals, who would you tell me it's going to be?
Who, child? It would have to be, I don't trust in Milwaukee, but they have a decent path. I hope the Knicks come back healthy, but if it's not Boston, it's probably going to be Milwaukee. And the reason I say this is, and I said it on air before, I don't know how Milwaukee is able to remain two in the East while playing with their food, while not fixing their issues in transition defense, while not helping their perimeter score defense out as well, while not responding on the road. Yet they still remain two in the East, where in a landscape at this point, that matters. That matters the most. And there's even an argument to be said that, like, oh, why are they not overreacting to losses? That's because they've been able to maintain their standing. A lot of times in these matchups, to answer your question, they could have these two best players on the floor if they're not playing against the Celtics. Mm-hmm. Going up against the Cavs team, going up against the Magic, going up against New York, Miami even, because they've been up and down with their star players' availability. They still have Giannis Antetokounmpo, who's coming off of a 35-point triple-double, and they still have Dame Lillard, who I know we're judging him a lot on this year's regular season, but his career has mainly been predicated on the postseason. So if they are both on the floor, and the game is slower, and they play smarter, and they actually do what they're supposed to do under Coach Doc Rivers, who was brought in to bring defense and bring that defensive improvement, they have two of the best players on the floor, and in the playoffs, anything can happen. So I as much as it pains me, because they're playing with our feelings and emotions, it's probably still the Bucks.
Chinua Ogunwuke with us. One more for you. I remain a voter for the NBA postseason awards, and I brought this up with Legler yesterday. I am torn on MVP. I do not want to be one of these people. I've always complained about this being a narrative award. So the idea of not voting for Jokic because I just want to see someone else win it, I can't do that. That would be so hypocritical of me based upon all the complaining I've done about the years that LeBron didn't win it and Michael Jordan didn't win it. I didn't have votes then. I do now. But what Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has done in Oklahoma City, to me, is so surprising. Like, nothing, I don't know if this is a good reason to vote for someone for MVP, but nothing that Jokic or the Nuggets have done this year surprises me at all. They've been basically exactly what I expected. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and the Thunder have been so much better than anyone could have expected. I'm having a very hard time not leaning in that direction. Now, we still have whatever it is, 10 days before these ballots go in. But what do you think? Who's the MVP?
So, Greeny, misery loves company. Excuse me. I think I have received the email that you have had for years. Mm-hmm. I believe I've joined the fold of MVP voters. A lot was going on this weekend, and so I haven't really read my emails the best way possible, but I'm pretty sure now I voted for All-Star and I'm going to be able to have a ballot, which I'm excited. So we're both in misery and agony together. Now, the only thing that I can say when it comes to MVP is at some times greatness becomes boring.
Yeah.
And that's Nikola Jokic. Mm-hmm. He's not going to do what most of the other MVPs are going to do. Luka Doncic knocking down ridiculous perimeter shots from range or hitting those even trick shots in warmups. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander getting downhill and producing 30 points per game. Giannis, even in the conversation, you know, he's not going to do those crazy, crazy things other than maybe some of those unexpected passes that you still are mystified because he's a post. But this is what I will give Jokic. I've seen so many games where he chooses to have 25 and 9 and 12, whereas he could have had 38, 8, and 6. Mm-hmm. And what is the difference between those two numbers? The difference between that is an NBA champion and an all-NBA player. And Jokic chooses to be an NBA champion. He chooses to let his teammates thrive and flourish off of his own, at times, expense of his own game. And so that, to me, is like the boring part of Jokic that hopefully maybe that helps you out a little bit. Now, I agree. MVP is also completely narrative in my eyes. It's hard to be like, okay, like we're going to give it back to the same guy. You know what I mean? And the narrative has been interesting the last few weeks. A lot of people swinging towards Luka even because they see him leading the league in scoring and all that type of stuff. But at the end of the day, I think like I just keep going back. Maybe it's because I'm a center, but sometimes greatness is boring because the best thing you can be as a player is saying, hey, that person was consistent. Jordan always won. LeBron always scored. Jokic always passed. Like, the consistency for Jokic is what I think And then also, like, I always said, I think that they're going to finish number one in the West.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, all else fails, best player, best team. Now the Celtics are stacked with the top five plus players. I think the Nuggets are totally favored in the West, but, like, they're favored because he has designed them to be favored, not designed himself to be the all everything.
By the way, on ESPN Bet, Jokic is the odds-on favorite. He's minus 1,000. Luka is next at plus 650, and SGA is at 2,000. So he's at 20-1 right now to win that award. What a pleasure it is, Chinee, to have this time. Thank you so much for jumping in here. I will see you as soon as we can.
Anytime, Greeny. Take care.
Take care. All right, Chinee Ogumike was just terrific with all of that. One-time number one overall pick in the WNBA draft. Has one Super Bowl window closed today? We'll answer that question next on ESPN Radio.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
Greeny, the podcast. Greeny with Mike Greenberg.
Everyone in America, just so if you're listening to me right now, I love you and I appreciate all of the support that you have given me through my life and my career, and I want to give back in any way I can. But if you have a baby, I don't want to hold it. If you walk up to me in Madison Square Park later today when I'm walking around, oh, Greeny, look, I had a baby. I don't want to hold it. I'm not holding anybody. I've held all the babies I need to hold. Why is that funny?
Because someday you'll maybe have a grandbaby.
That means I have to hold it.
This is Greeny.
So Hembo's having another baby. Hembo and his wife are having a third girl due in August. I really have no idea why, which is to say, Hembo just strikes me as the last person in the world who should have any children. So the idea that he's now going to have more, like, am I the only one who thinks this is just a bad idea and can only end badly? Like Hembo is not. Let me ask you a question, Cam. If you had a pet, do you have a pet?
I do not. I had some growing up. I had cats.
Okay. So let's just say you had a cat, a dog, whatever, a goldfish, a gerbil, a hamster, a parakeet, whatever kind of domesticated animal it is people tend to keep in their homes. And you were going away for a while and you needed someone to watch that pet. How many people would have to say no before you would entrust that animal to Hembo's care? Like, I'm trying to think in my life, I only ask you that because you don't have children, so you couldn't, I have had children in my life. I mean, I still have children in my life, but they're not children anymore. They no longer need to be watched when I'm not around. But in the event that my kids were little and Stace and I were going away and we were going to ask someone to, like, you know, stay in our house and watch them for a weekend, which happened many times, and, you know, as tends to, like, the idea that that person would be Hembo, like, I don't know how we would get to that. I have to think there'd be at least 1,000 people I would ask. Like, I'm not sure they wouldn't be better off alone than with Hembo.
Yeah. Like, I think you're calling a lot of people. Because he's just going to, like, forget to give them dinner because he was looking up, you know, what Hannes Wagner's batting average was in 1902.
There's just nothing, Bubba, there's just nothing I trust about him in that regard, right? And again, right. I love him. I say it with love. I love the man. He is a very functional person to have in your life. He serves an extraordinarily important function and use. Yes, he's useful. But he has some real deficiencies.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think whatever that number is, 100, 1,000, I think you're exhausting that list, and then you're deciding, you have to make a real hard decision. Are you letting your kids or pet, whatever it is, be alone, or are you canceling the plans? I think it's one or the other. But, yeah, I think you can't go to Hembo. You just can't. But I think you have to really decide, all right, we're supposed to go away for the weekend. Sorry, we can't do it because Hembo.
Hembo or Larry David? If you have kids in the house, Bubba, I know you love, you admire, you worship, bordering on worship, Larry David.
Yeah.
Would you feel more, but we all know how he is, right? Larry is curmudgeonly.
He has kids.
If I'm not mistaken, he choked Elmo on national television recently.
Yeah, that recently happened.
He does have children. Yeah. I don't know how old they are. I don't know anything about that. But would you be more comfortable leaving your kids for a weekend with Hembo or with Larry David?
That's a good question.
Well, Larry David could at least easily pay for someone else to come in and do things.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh,
he's very rich.
I think I would still go Larry.
Oh, yeah.
I think, you know, no matter what, Larry, I think, would still, he might not do the right thing, but he still would have the best interest in the kids involved, where Hembo literally, like, to Cam's point, would forget because he's reading page 1009 of, you know, Baseball Register, and he's like, oh, it's interesting, the 1912 Athletics, you know, missed game 124.
Right.
Like, and then he forgets 2 hours later, and he forgot about the kids. I think Larry would just go about his day doing all these different things, but he'd remember the kids and do so. I would go Larry.
You know how they like to do on the morning show here on Unsportsmanlike? Like, they like to do these talent drafts.
Oh, they're all about the drafts.
So, yeah. So, and I'm told I made it. I was one of the people they would invite to a party today, which is hilarious because I am not good at parties. But regardless of that, if we were to do a draft of the last three people at ESPN you would leave your kids with for a weekend, I would start with Hembo. Like, he'd be my first choice. I can't think of anyone at ESPN I wouldn't sooner leave my kid. Maybe Jack. Maybe Pineapple Jack. Even Pineapple Jack, he's got an earnest quality about him, you know? Like, I feel like he'd give it a college try.
They'd be eating fruit. They'd be eating healthy.
Yeah, they'd eat pineapple.
I'm not entirely sure.
They'd probably start wearing jerseys.
I'm not entirely sure I want my kids over at Carlin's house.
Chris Carlin?
Yeah.
He doesn't have kids.
Exactly.
Does he have kids?
He doesn't have kids. He doesn't want kids.
He's very anti-kids.
Yeah, he wants nothing to do with kids. So I don't think I want my kids over at Carlin's house.
I think another one, and he's an excellent father to his own kids, but I think if you leave your kids with Bart Scott, they're probably learning some words you don't want them to learn at age 7.
Bart Scott. That's a good one.
That's a good one. Like, Bart has, you know the expression resting something face, you know that term?
Yeah.
Bart has resting angry face, right? Like, every time I look at Bart, I'm like, what's the matter? And he's like, what?
And he's so funny.
And I realize that's just what his face looks like. Like, he just always looks so pissed off.
But he's generally happy and funny.
He is. You guys will know this because you know him. Every single time he comes in there, I'll say, good morning, Bartholomew. How are you? And he always goes, Hakuna Matata, Greeny. Hakuna Matata. Yeah, that's his phrase. Hakuna Matata. Like, he's as happy a person as you will ever come across.
He doesn't look it at all.
Though. Oh, my God. His face looks like something terrible has just happened, and he is going to seek vengeance like that. So, but I would much sooner leave my kids with Bart than I would with him.
100%.
Absolutely, no.
Like, maybe Nuno.
Oh,
I think Nuno's pretty low on the
maybe
list.
Maybe we've stumbled upon the one that I would not. Like, I would leave my kids with Bubba, honestly, before I'd leave them with Hembo.
Bubba would take him to get tacos. I think Bubba would watch be a good Met babysitter.
Game.
Yeah,
right.
He'd have a great
we'd
time.
Cry
with Bubba.
Watching some movies.
Yeah, Mets going to win any games this year, by the way, Bubs? Or what's going to happen there?
I mean, terrible.
I mean,
maybe when JD Martinez gets there, good they might God, eke out a couple. But
all right. Anyway, Stephon Diggs has been traded to the Houston Texans. Does that mean the Bills' Super Bowl window is slammed shut? We'll talk about that and a whole lot more when we reconvene tomorrow. By the way, congratulations, Hembo and Lizzie. On the pending third child. See you tomorrow, Greeny, on ESPN Radio.
for listening to Greeny the Podcast. You can listen live each weekday morning at 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio. Or watch the show through the Watch tab on the ESPN app. Also catch Greeny on Get Up, weekday mornings at 8 on ESPN. And also available wherever you get your podcast.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.